Welcome to this episode of The Cinema Guys, where we love to watch movies. Can't wait to share our thoughts with you. We recently went to see Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Can't wait to give our thoughts. Also, in this episode, we talk about adaptations and give you not only some of our favorites, but also some of our not-so-favorites.
A lot of our not-so-favorites.
We'll finish it off with a few at-home recommendations. I'm Brad, and before we get started, let's bring in my fellow cinema guys, Justin and Michael.
I feel like we should like walk in. Here we come. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Brad, how's it going?
Hey, guys.
Just coming in now.
What's shaking?
I always start off with what's shaking, usually.
Yeah,
that's good. It's a weird one. What's shaking? Why do we even ask that?
I don't know. It's better than what's crack-a-lacking.
What's adapting? Maybe we should say that. Hey, what's adapting?
Ooh. Anyways. We're going to talk adaptations. And obviously adaptations can be a tough thing, whether you're adapting a novel, video game, comic book.
Just to name a few.
There's adaptations of many other things.
The pros.
It's always hard to appease the hardcore fans and bring in new people who haven't read or seen or.
But I think there's rules. There are rules to adaptations. I feel like there should be, just like there's the 12 laws of transfiguration within Harry Potter, there should be like laws within adapting. At some point, you're not adapting anymore. You're Dr. Seussian, like, you know, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. They made a whole movie, or the Lorax made a whole movie based on a children's book. Because they're saying, hey, I'm just taking the idea, and then we're going to make a novel, you know, make something big.
Yeah.
But I think when there's big novels, you should be able to use the majority of the story that was already there, and you're adapting it, not just, hey, I'm just going to make up something whole new here, and anyways, we'll get into that later.
But I would argue against that, because, I mean, there are some movies that take parts of things and make a wonderful story that works well for the visual medium of film. That doesn't always work well.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your list then. Because I'm super skeptical. Because my brain, when I read, is very big. And when I see the movie sometimes, I'm very disappointed. Most of the times.
And it's always hard to appease everybody. That's a tough thing with adaptations.
Now, do you guys have a rule? Like, my rule used to be, I watch movies first. Or no, read books first and watch movies first. Or second. Read, then watch. And now, especially in the last couple of years, I've reversed it, where I'll watch a movie first, and then I'll read the book, because then I end up liking both of them, whereas if I read the book first, I'm like, oh, this book's great, and most of the time, I'm disappointed in the movie. So, but the other way, I like them both. I'm like, oh, it wasn't great, but I liked the movie first.
I have no rules on it. Sometimes I just won't even read the original material. I'll just enjoy what it is.
There's a lot of them I haven't read, I'm not a huge novel reader. I'm more of a visual watching movies. So there are a lot of probably adaptations. I love the movie, and people are like, it's not as good as the book. And I'm like, well, I didn't read the book, so I like the movie. And I have some on my list that are like that.
Like, what's the one that we were reading when I first met you? We were both reading it.
Oh, Maze Runner.
Maze Runner. That's right.
Which, by the way, I have not finished, but I like the movie. Let's jump into our segment we call Flick Picks.
Flick Picks!
The time where we give you our favorite, and this time our least favorite, adaptations. So we'll start with, Justin. You seem to have quite the list. Give us a few of your favorites.
Oh, we're starting with favorites. Okay, favorites. It's smaller and more distinguished. So, my favorites, number one is Fight Club. The book is great. And the movie was great. I thought both of them coexisted in their own, like in the book, you know, there's a lot of differences, which I'm really into the differences. I like that. But I felt like the movie kept to the same strain and story as the book. It was good.
Yeah, I love Fight Club a lot.
Rebecca. So I read Rebecca with my wife. She had read it. And Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca is, I mean, amazing. What Alfred Hitchcock, and this is more a testament to him than actually the adaptation itself, but what he did with the characters, just even without them saying anything, he like really captured who they were. The Watchmen. I loved almost screen for screen, page for page, except for one little difference. It was exactly the same.
I figured that would be on your list
yes,
as much as you
of course.
Love that movie,
I think The Watchmen at least pops up in like every episode of Cinema Guys. The Hunger Games, not because I love those movies, but I feel like you could probably watch the movies and you haven't missed out on much in the books. Like, little
no.
details. Game of Thrones, but only season one. Because I've literally known people who watch season one and then they pick up book two and they haven't missed a beat. Season one is a great adaptation. After that, it's actually two totally different things.
That's one that I have not read the books. I've only seen the show, and I absolutely love the show.
Yeah,
it's my favorite show on television.
The books are way after. Yeah, season one, book one, exactly the same thing. After that, they're two totally different stories. And then the last one, and this is a random one, but I happen to read the book, is Holes. It's a kids' movie.
That's a good one.
By Nickelodeon, Shia LaBeouf, and it's. I mean, again, you don't really need to read the book if you watch the movie because it's exactly the same thing. That's my best list.
What about your worst list?
Oh, we're going to that too. Straight to that. Okay, it's a little longer. And it's not because there's so many that are bad. There probably are, but these are the ones that like I just keep adding to the list whenever I see one that's so horrible. The first one's going to be, and we'll talk about later, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children because it's a horrible adaptation, which we'll talk about later. The worst of any adaptation I've ever seen is Percy Jackson. Percy Jackson, the first one, the second one, I didn't even watch because the first one was so bad. It's not even the same story. They barely use the character names, and that's about it. Other than that, it's not even the same. It's a whole... They made up something. I don't even know what they did.
I saw the first movie and did not like it. I've never read those books. Sensing a theme here. I have not read the books.
The books are awesome. Like, there's now like 10 of them. I love the books, and the book series is great. And again, all you had to do is just follow the plot that's already been given to you, and we would have all enjoyed it. But I also have Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. That movie, not just that it was a bad adaptation, it just missed the entire point of the book. There was big character and character arcs that were part of the entire story that the author was telling, and the movie just said, nah, we don't care about that. We're going to make up our own thing because Tom Hanks is cool. The Road. With Viggo Mortensen.
Okay, yes, I know.
It was based on a Cormac McCarthy book. Yep. And The Road, the book, is in my top three books of all time. And the thing is that The Road was not a bad movie at all. And it wasn't a bad adaptation. My thing is, there is no way the movie could ever capture the devastating, horrible feeling that you get when you read that book. Sorry, almost done. Order of the Phoenix.
Quite the list.
Order of the Phoenix, the Harry Potter movie. They should have made two movies. Or should have made two movies for the one book because they just basically missed the entire story of the Order of the Phoenix. That's movie five. If you're following, East of Eden, which is my all-time favorite book of all time, and they made like a 60s version. I think James Dean's in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they were reading because it, again, was not even the same story. And then last is Ender's Game.
Just to go back to that for a second there, I thought you were talking about Exit to Eden.
Oh, with Rosie O'Donnell. Yeah. And where they're like in the sex club or the nudist colony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, that's his all-time favorite book?
That's all y'all.
Because that's Anne Rice book.
But is it really a book?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a book. And it's an Anne Rice book?
Yeah.
Are there vampires?
No, there's no vampires.
But Ender's Game. Again, great book. The movie just really missed, I thought, some of the bigger parts of the story.
And that was another one that I enjoyed the movie a lot, and I've never read the book.
Mm.
So, well, I guess I'll jump into it. I kind of broke my favorites into ones that I have actually seen that have been adapted, and adaptations that I enjoy, but I haven't read the source material.
Okay, that's good.
Like, for instance, the Harry Potter series as a whole, I thought was a great adaptation of the books.
Yeah,
there was a lot cut out, but...
and that's my thing. None of them are bad. They probably should have done two movies. Everyone would have given them crap for that.
Mm-hmm.
But they should have done two movies at least for book 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Oh, they easily could have.
Yeah. I would say my favorite out of them is the third one, Prisoner of Azkaban. I think it's the best one.
Oh, yeah.
That one is, yes.
Never seen a better casted movie ever than those movies. They casted everyone perfectly.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was great seeing them actually grow up through the movies and not, like...
And become, like, real actors.
And yeah.
Well, Daniel Radcliffe will say, like, it was Alan Rickman, I think, that sat him down and said, you have gotten the best acting education that anyone will ever get because of all the directors, all the actors that you've gone through since you were little who have given you advice and have helped you along the way. You can't ask for a better, like, education than that.
The Watchmen. I have read the book Watchmen. And the movie. I thought it was a great adaptation.
How long did it take you to get through The Watchmen?
The movie or the book?
The book. The movie should have been about 3 hours.
A week.
And it was always dubbed like the book, the unfilmable book. That they always said that it could never be made into a movie.
You know what the unfilmable book is right now? Blood Meridian. It's another Cormac McCarthy book. Mm-hmm. The most violent thing I've ever read in my entire life. And apparently they've tried several times to make a movie, and they've just said they either can't make it tame enough to make it for the masses. But James Franco thinks he can.
Franco will do it.
One of my favorite books of all time they've tried to get into a movie, Neuromancer by William Gibson.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I don't know this book.
They have never been able to turn it into a movie.
What is Neuromancer?
Are you familiar with Johnny Mnemonic?
Yes, I am familiar with
Johnny.
That
is one of his stories.
Yeah. He's nothing to do with this.
He's basically the father of what you would consider cyberpunk.
Okay, cool.
And a lot of his...
What's Neuromancer about?
I want to see read the book. It is a sci-fi
is
movie.
Is it a good book?
It's a great book.
It's like a classic.
Is the book of Johnny Mnemonic called Johnny Mnemonic?
That one was, I believe, a short story, and he had a book full of short stories.
I need to check this out.
Talking Dolphin.
What? Like a Sequest with Brendan Fraser?
That was in Johnny Mnemonic. There was a Talking
Dolphin. There was a Talking Dolphin, Johnny Mnemonic? All I remember is him putting the info in his brain, and then...
Yeah, a lot of his stuff deals with, like, hackers and information and all that. Like, Neuromancer is really good. One he did after that called Count Zero is an excellent book, too. Very similar.
So then Sequest stole the Talking Dolphin. Darwin was his name. From
I guess
Johnny Mnemonic.
We'll go with that.
Take that, Sequest.
Some of my, I would say, top adaptations that I have not read the source material. The Lord of the Rings trilogy. I love the movies, but I have never read the books.
I feel like that has to be at the top of everyone's list. I didn't add it only because I knew that you were going to add it. And I was like, oh, of course. They really are the best
wonderful
adaptations.
Of...
Oh, and no. There is no one. And this is what I go when I think of adaptations. Peter Jackson, I feel like, sets the bar for he is in love with Tolkien and the story and the universe. And he only wants to do it honor. I feel like every adaptation should have such
and
passion.
The Hobbit, mm-hmm. Once I didn't read The Hobbit, but I enjoyed it, but not as much as Lord of the Rings.
Right. Oh, yeah, I would say that's true of the books, too. I enjoyed The Hobbit, but I like Lord
I mean,
of the
it's a less action-packed story, less monumental in its
And when you
grasp.
Take one book and try to stretch it into three movies, it's gonna...
Well, and that scene in Fellowship of the Ring when they're in the Mines of Moria... is actually my favorite all-time favorite book scene of all time. Like, I loved it, and I thought he captured it perfectly.
Another one that I love that I know a lot of hardcore fans of this book hated the movie, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I loved the movie. I've never read the book.
Yeah, I loved the book. I did not
and I
like
read
the
book either, so maybe that's...
The book is so different, again. That should probably be on my worst list, because I loved that book, and I was like, oh, this movie's going to be great.
But Martin Freeman's so good, and Alan Rickman as the robot, so...
Oh, yeah.
Alan Rickman as the robot is probably the best choice you could ever make for Marvin the robot, but every other cast member, even though I like them all, because what was it, Mos Def? Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah. Zooey Deschanel, yeah, all of them. I'm like, that's not who I am.
It had a great cast, and I just went to the... When I saw it in the theater, obviously, I never read the book, so I didn't know too much about it. I knew this was this popular book, and then I just came out of the movie just with a grin on my face going, I enjoyed this movie. It was just fun. Another one that I just thought of that... I haven't read the source material. I Am Legend. I know it has been remade multiple times. I really liked the Will Smith version of it. I thought it was a good, you know, last man on earth type movie.
Mm. That's interesting because I love the Will Smith movie. And then I actually saw the old movie from the 70s where they have like the sunglasses and pale faces.
It's probably the Omega Man.
Omega Man. And then I read the book, Omega Man. The book's Omega Man, right?
No, the book's Iron Legend.
And the book is way different. Even the book has different cast of vampires. There's the gross ones, but there's also like normal ones who just aren't the gross ones, and they're two totally different things. But I don't care. I thought they were both really good. The book is the dude becoming an alcoholic in his house, as he's just shut up by himself the whole time. Like, and the dog is only like 3 pages of one chapter. Whereas in the movie, the dog is like his best friend. So the movie was actually awesome. That's a good, interesting thought, because I guess that goes against everything else, I think, because they did not pay attention to the book. But that movie was good. I loved it.
You can take ideas and make them better.
Can you?
I think you can.
I guess that's art.
So on to some of my least favorite adaptations. First one, I haven't read this book, and after seeing the movie, I don't even want to read the book, is The Da Vinci Code.
Hated the movie. I liked the book. Not enough to read all the other stupid ones.
I didn't mind the movie.
I thought Tom Hanks was the worst cast for that character.
And he because of that, like,
it was still an entertaining movie.
They should have cast Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's who I pictured as I was reading the book, was Anthony Stewart.
Anthony Stewart Head or something like
Yes, that's it, because I downloaded a music...
There you go.
From iTunes, because I liked one of the songs he did in Buffy. I'm like, almost all his music, and it was horrible. But, yeah, he is who should have been in Da Vinci Code. Anyways, yeah, that's a good one.
Another adaptation, it wasn't directly from a book, but the Catwoman movie, based off of, you know, that comic book character.
Oh, yeah.
With Halle Berry, I thought was terrible.
Yeah, were they even talking about the comic book? Because it was really bad.
Yeah, it was really bad. Sharon Stone.
She won the Razzie that year for that.
And she actually showed up and accepted it.
Do they typically not show up to accept them?
No.
Oh, are they mad?
See, I tried to keep comic book adaptations off just because they could be so bad.
I think, to me, anything was fair game. Like, one of my other terrible ones is a video game. House of the Dead, which pretty much every movie Uwe Boll makes is...
That's almost worth its own list, bad and good video game adaptations.
They're pretty much all bad.
Yeah. I feel like there was one recently where I thought, oh, the Assassin's Creed one looks kind of cool.
It'll be horrible.
It probably will be. What was it, Prince of Persia?
The Super Mario Brothers one was a bad movie, but there's just part of me that just enjoys the guilty pleasure of watching that.
Bob Hoskins had no idea that Mario was a video game until his little nephew or something like that was like, I love this video game. He's like, what? This is a video game? Like, he had no idea. They had no idea what they were doing.
Really had nothing to do with the game at all.
Like, part of that, like, era where they were just like, we'll just throw a name on it and make it whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I'll take the only good video game movie is Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, it is so good. But it's not based on a real video game, is it?
It's close enough.
Yeah. It was. That was excellent.
Wreck-It Ralph was great.
My last one was just kind of an easy one, is Twilight. But I never really read the books, and I don't like their version of vampires at all. I think the sparkly vampires is...
I have read all the books.
And what are your thoughts?
Well, so I was going to say this in a second. I have one more list that I created of 4 movies that... I saw the movie without reading the book, and I hated the movie, but I remember thinking, oh, I like what they've done here. I bet there's a good book behind it. So Twilight was one where I saw the first one. I was like, well, this is kind of dumb. But I was like, oh, I like this werewolf vampire thing they're going with, although they're not werewolves. They're children of the moon, FYI. And so Twilight, then I read all the books, and they're not great books, they're actually pretty bad, but she's a good storyteller, and I like the story. Percy Jackson was another one. I saw the movie, I was like, I don't like this, but then I read all the books, I was like, oh, these books are awesome. Avatar, which is an adaptation from a cartoon, but I saw the movie.
Not James Cameron's Avatar.
The Last Airbender. And I was like, this movie sucks, but there's something cool behind it. And then I went and watched all 3 seasons of Avatar, The Last Airbender. And it was amazing. And then last was Game of Thrones again. I started watching season 1. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I should read them all. And then I read them all. So I think there's also that where you see a movie and they're like, okay, it's not great, but there's a thread of an idea here that's probably fleshed out more in the book.
So, like, you said you wouldn't put comic books on the list of, like, an adaptation list. What about something like a remake or adapting, not necessarily a book, but an already current movie and reimagining, as they like to say nowadays?
It depends upon how much they change. Like, if it's just, like, Footloose, where they basically remade the same movie just with a modern cast. I wouldn't really consider that a...
Or Psycho, where you made it shot for shot.
Yeah. Mm. I wouldn't really consider that an adaptation.
Footloose was outfit for outfit. Totally. Yeah. They mimicked every outfit.
But something like Hannibal the television show is a reimagining of that entire world, where it brings in new thoughts and ideas, which, as I've said before, is one of my favorite television shows of all time. And so that I would consider a wonderful adaptation, taking the source material, modernizing it, adding in new ideas, new relationships, and really fleshing out that story much more than it ever has in the books. So I guess I should go over my list. Now, my issue is I have good movies that I like, things that I think are good adaptations, but I really can't think of many that I think are horrible adaptations. I mean, there's ones that, like, you know, the comic book movies that we talk about, maybe, like, you could rip on Batman and Robin till the cows come home. I mean, it's a horrible movie. It's not a true representation of Batman, but it's just so bad that it just...
Well,
they're not really even trying to stick to the source material. So I tried to think of things that were actually trying to stick to the source material or create something new, and I really couldn't think of something that I absolutely hate.
And the problem with that one, I think they tried to take that world that Joel Schumacher had created, where it's a little more colorful, and he's like, oh, let's try to make it goofy like the 60s Batman, and it
colorful
it
or neon
work.
But I feel like they don't even understand the material. Like,
tell us, Bruce Wayne, who's the new hot Jane tonight? I love it.
Oh, I agree.
The problem with comic book movies, though, is that the source material has changed so much. Mm-hmm. So for instance, every Batman, like, I know a lot of the younger people love the Christopher Nolan ones, because he took the Dark Knight. But Batman wasn't always a Dark Knight. Sometimes he was the detective. Sometimes he was what Ben Affleck is portraying. Like, he's always... And so they've all been written 1,000 different times, 1,000 different ways. Mm-hmm. So that's what's hard, is whose Batman are you taking, or whose story are you adapting here?
Well, yeah, and comic books have so many storylines like that. They have the Batman, Detective Comics, the Shadow of the Bat, and every single one is a different take or a different way that it goes.
Yeah, and then you have things like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where they're taking ideas of these storylines that are going off in completely different tangents. I mean, Civil War, the comic, is a great comic. It has great ideas. They took some of those core elements, put it into the movie, but it's not the same. It's not even close.
Like the Fantastic Four. Those should be on the list of worst ever.
those are just bad movies. I just feel like they don't get the source material, and so I don't feel like it's a true adaptation. I think they're just trying to take a property and throw on a label, and you could make that Fantastic Four movie, any of them, they could be, you know, just random sci-fi things. And again, I think it goes back to,
like, Joss Whedon cared about what the Avengers were, or what the Avengers were written to be, and he really tried to appreciate that. I think there's some people who just don't care. They're like, well, let's just take it, and I want to make my own thing.
He's just making a movie. That's just so bad. I mean, you're trying to take something that has almost no plot and make a movie out of it. I mean, that's, I feel like, some gray territory. But then you get into things like, you know, the 90s Stephen King adaptation TV series, like It and
I feel like Stand. Stephen King should have his own, like, segment, because some of them are great, some of them are horrible.
I mean, It and Stand are not great shows. I mean, they're very low quality. They're not bad. They kind of get the idea. But, I mean, you could tell the person who was making it kind of cared about the source material and wanted to present the movie, wanted to present the story in a as close version as possible. But that's kind of a failure. So to go to my list, I was trying to think of movies that I really love. Some of them I've read the source material, some of them I haven't. And so the first one is 25th Hour, which is a Spike Lee movie adapted from David Benioff, who does Game of Thrones. It's his first novel, and I saw the movie first. It's a wonderful movie. Kind of a Spike Lee almost redoing, to a certain extent, Do the Right Thing. Stars Edward Norton, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
25th Hour?
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Basically, it's just the last day in the life of Edward Norton before he goes to jail. And it's a great movie, great cast, one of my favorite Spike Lee movies of all time.
25th Hour, why I haven't seen it? That sounds awesome.
Next would be American Psycho. Again, I saw the movie first. I thought the movie was really good. I
forgot about that one.
I've read...
I love that movie.
Bret Easton Ellis' book, which is, I think, is just as good as the movie. It has a couple more... It has more entertaining things in it. It's definitely much more extreme than the movie. And that movie's pretty extreme for the violence and everything. The book takes it up another notch, but it's wonderfully written and just a wonderful satire. Now, some things I haven't read. Conan the Barbarian. I've never read the original books, but...
Ooh, I haven't read... As Edgar Rice Burroughs, right?
Correct.
Yes.
But I love that original movie. I mean, so good. John Milius is at top of his game directing that movie. Arnold is just a perfect casting for it. It's goofy. It's serious. It's just wonderful. And you got James Earl Jones. And you got Conan holding James Earl Jones' head and throwing it down the stairs.
Then to hell with you, Crumb.
Requiem for the Dream, or Requiem for a Dream. The most visceral movie I've probably ever seen. Like, that's I can't think of another movie that made me feel disgusting afterwards.
I still can't get over that arm scene.
It's so good. I mean, that just proves how good of a movie it is that your skin crawls when you think of that movie. And I've watched it multiple times, and it does not diminish after multiple viewings. You still feel
gross.
Darren Aronofsky.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
And then last, I had an Alfred Hitchcock movie as well, which is this is my favorite Alfred Hitchcock movie, Strangers on a Train.
I haven't seen it.
I spent one of my quarters in film school, but like 4 weeks we spent watching this movie, or dissecting this movie, just going over everything that Alfred Hitchcock did. I mean, his ability to manipulate, and every scene is important in every one of his movies, and it's just such a fun movie about random people encountering each other, and then a murder ensues. And such a wonderful film. If you haven't seen it, definitely go out and check it out.
I do need to see that. We should at least mention the movie Adaptation.
Yeah, which is a great movie as well.
Because it's a movie about a writer making an adaptation of his book, but the movie itself is also an adaptation of a book, correct?
Correct. I'm pretty sure. It's like a book about orchids. But that actually reminds me, I had one more, which is Where the Wild Things Are. Which
I didn't like the movie.
I love that book. It was my favorite childhood book growing up. I've read it to my kids a thousand times. And I felt Spike Jonze did something so amazing in capturing what it feels like to be a child. Like, there are just scenes in that movie where lost in it, and you just feel so scared. Like, when he gets all the snow falls on top of him from the fort, and he's scared and freaking out. And just the anger and aggression, just then how he uses the monsters as basically a reflection back on Max and how he was acting. I just think it's a wonderful piece, and the music's wonderful. And
it's good. I think it's a good adaptation. I didn't love the movie.
I mean,
I think I went in thinking it was going to be like tear jerking, and I did not jerk a tear.
Spike Jonze for me he's never made a bad movie. He's 4 for 4, and his movies are wonderful. That's my list. I really don't have any ones I hate. I mean, there's just bad movies, but
no, well, that's just kind of there's bad adaptations.
Hey, everybody. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, Red Tree Art Gallery and Coffee Shop.
Let me tell you, I love coffee. I don't want Starbucks. I don't want some watery swill that old Lady Ethel made from church on Sunday. I want good coffee. I want a place to work. I want Wi-Fi. I want good customer service, not the, hey, my manager told me to say hi to people. Nice, but I want real, genuine customer service. I want good food, good local food, and I want a nice community space to hang out. I know I want a lot. I get it. Well, guess what? I found the place. I found where you need to be. It's Red Tree Art Gallery and Coffee Shop, 3210 Madison Road in Oakley, Cincinnati. Come. Use the word cinema, guys, for a free small drip coffee. Let them know we sent you. Enjoy the place. I know you will.
speaking of
bad adaptations,
we just recently saw an adaptation. We went to see Miss Peregrine's House for Peculiar, is it House or
Home? I think it well,
Home
the book's
for
got
Peculiar
Home.
Children, which is directed by Tim Burton, stars Ava Green and Asa Butterfield. You, Justin, have read the book. Right. I have not.
Well, and
I have not either.
Unfortunately, so I had just read the book, so which is always bad. You always want a year before you, so you forget the details of the book. So you're like, oh yeah, that was kind of it.
Actually, I do want to take a minute and retract my statement. There are plenty of Tim Burton adaptations that are horrible.
So I did not like the movie. I thought, as a movie, it was bad. It was boring. And the whole time, I just couldn't grasp why you decide to make an adaptation when you don't care about when you're telling something different. Like, just make your own movie then. Just do your own thing and call it someone else, like Miss Johnson's Home for Weird Kids or something.
for weirdy weirdos.
But no, I just the whole time I was like, this is dumb. It's because I thought the book was actually a very unique book in and of itself. That it took old pictures that are real pictures. He went and collected. He spent a long time, the author, collecting real old creepy photos that just had a weird ray of light, or maybe back when people were trying to make things look weird without mm-hmm. any technology. And so he finds them, and then he wrote his novel based on the creepy pictures. And so as you read the book, about every 15 pages there's like weird pictures that are real. And so I thought, oh, what a creative way to do a book. Man, Tim Burton fits the bio for who should be making this movie, because he can make an element of weird. I mean, I love some Tim Burton movies. Big Fish being one of them is one of my favorite movies. And I just thought in this one he totally wrote a boring, directed a boring film that had nothing to do with anything. Anything.
I mean, I didn't like it, but I don't think I hated it as much as you did. I did think it was fairly boring, and I liked the beginning part of the movie more than, like, the first quarter to half more than the second half. I thought the lead-up was good, and then it just kind of fell off a cliff.
I'm more in the camp with Brad. I mean, I have not read the book, so I went in with almost no expectations. I went in basically saying this is going to be a horrible movie. Enjoyed, I would say, up until the climax starts to happen, where they actually... Oh, Samuel L. Jackson's character gets into the whatever world they're in. I enjoyed all of it. I enjoyed the characters. They were a little kooky. It wasn't the best fleshing out of these characters, but it was at least interesting. And but I mean, at the end of the day, I fell asleep in the finale. And
so why?
Which I thought that last, we're gonna get into spoilers here, because the last fight, where they have these skeletons come in fighting these little, like, Slenderman creatures.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was horrible.
No more than that happened in the book, so I don't know.
Like, it was all of a sudden it was this techno music starts, and there's like, psh, 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 and they're just, like, fighting. I'm like, what is going on here? This is completely away from the style that you were going before.
Well, and there's some things that I thought could have been cool, like, you get that there's a lot of weird people out there from the book. You know, the book's only showing you a few.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, bring in some new weird people. That's cool. That's super fun for a movie. But, like, weird things. Like, the main character of the book is obviously the boy. And the girl who could fly is a nobody. She's in the background. She's in, like, maybe three scenes of the book. But it was another girl who could do the fire hands. Like, you meet her in the movie. But it seems like Tim Burton's like, yeah, I really like Fly Girl a little better. Let's do Fly Girl, not Fire Hands Girl. And I'm like, what? I'd love to know why that decision was made. Like, I just think this is a better way to do it.
I liked the concept of, you know, these peculiar children, and they're on this house that had been bombed, and basically the only way that they can stay existing is that she, like, winds back time every day. I thought that concept was cool, but then it just kind of...
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they wanted to make these children into superheroes.
To the X-Men.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really not... They have odd things about them, but, right. like, you know, flying girl, she's as light as a feather. She can't fly. She's just light.
So they have to weigh her down.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not really power. That's a debilitation. Right.
That's sort of the book, too. Like, you get the idea when adversity comes, until they met the boy and his grandfather, they were the only two that could ever fight them, because they're the only two that could ever see them.
Yeah. But even that's not really a power. It's just, oh, I can see them.
Right.
It's
like, now so, but you get helplessness in the book. Like, oh, they can't do anything.
When they're you know, it's kind of like that climax, and they're all using their powers to fight all these other bad guys. And the was it the kids that could take off their masks?
Yeah, which was made up for the movie, which is fine.
I was like, why didn't they just lead with that?
Right, lead with that.
Throw them in there, they wipe everybody out, you're good to go. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, why create this battle? I mean, it just doesn't seem like that's the logical follow through. I mean, it seems like they would need to use their wits to get away from the Samuel Jackson Slenderman type characters.
Instead of using like that, they just turn it into an action piece.
Yeah.
Because the book really deals a lot with this kid. I mean, it's halfway through the book before he even meets these children, because it's dealing a lot with his depression, a lot with his anxiety issues because of the odd relationship he had with his grandfather, who he found brutally murdered. Like, so, and he had a lot of family issues. His parents have issues. And his grandfather had issues from being a soldier in the war. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of the book, it was kind of cool because you're like, oh, maybe this book is more about like these post-traumatic stress issues. And then you're like, oh, okay, there are magical kids. Because for a while you're like, oh, I think it's all just made up. Yeah. So it's cool. Like, the book was just very mysterious, and it was something cool. And like the monsters and stuff, you know, for a long time, he just thought, oh, the monsters were my grandfather's way of telling me about the Nazis. Because he didn't know how to tell a child about the horrible things he witnessed in war. And they hint in that a little bit.
But they definitely speed it up and make that kind of just...
Right. And I get that you have to do that. I get that you have to speed through things, but...
And they kind of felt like it turned it into Samuel Jackson's little character just wanted to, you know, quote-unquote, take over everything.
Right.
Which he... I like Samuel Jackson, but he was just there.
Yeah.
He wasn't any special villain or anything that you would... Like, you're supposed to be afraid of him, but I didn't feel...
And I knew it would be like that.
It was more Deep Blue Sea Samuel Jackson.
Deepest blue.
He didn't have the great speech before the shark got him.
No.
No, I knew it would be like that from the big pictures. You saw, you know, for months the movie had the big giant cutouts. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, okay, they're all like cool leathery... Like leather outfits, and like Miss Peregrine's like young and cool looking. And the book, everything has this old timey feel, like they're in old gowns and like Peter Panish kind of London is how it felt like.
So we could say that this probably wasn't one of Tim Burton's best movies, for sure.
Certainly not his worst movie.
What is his worst?
Well, we can start with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Maybe that should be.
That might be my worst thing. I mean, that just misses the boat entirely on what Roald Dahl is and what that story is, and just why.
That's bad.
And you got Alice in Wonderland.
Ugh, and Alice in Wonderland 2.
I don't even. I don't think he even directed that. But
he didn't do the second one. He did the first.
But he still set.
I think he just he may have produced the second one.
But he still set up the terrible look of it.
I loved the Alice in Wonderland.
Did you?
Oh yes.
I agree so far. Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
Cinema Guy's over.
Sucks. Alice in Wonderland sucks.
I just feel like he lost track of story and started concentrating on visuals.
Right. I agree with that. Because, you know, again, Alice in Wonderland and Charlie and Chocolate Factory visually is very cool.
Yeah, but the stories are weak. They're just not well made. And I felt this kind of fell into that same... I mean, I didn't hate the movie because I had, again, no expectation of it. I didn't know the source material, so I was entertained for the first part. And I thought the cast was good. Was it Chris O'Dowd? He played his father.
Oh, yes.
I thought he was a really good comic relief. I thought the town kids were fun. I mean, there was aspects that I enjoyed. It was just when it got to, you know, the final hoorah, and we got to chase and run around.
When it turned into this big... Action piece. So, overall, I don't think any of us would truly recommend it, Justin especially.
You should not go see it. Go see anything else.
I would say when it comes on HBO or something like that, watch it. It's enjoyable enough. I mean, if you have an early teenage kid...
Don't spend Redbox money on it.
No.
But I think if you have a teenager or someone who just kind of falls into the wheelhouse of that, they would enjoy it. I mean, yeah, I can definitely see people liking this movie.
I enjoyed the first half, at least.
Mm-hmm. Just watch the first half.
Just watch the first half.
That was great. It's a mini movie.
Just turn it off.
So what are you guys watching at home?
So, here are a few things that you can sit back and enjoy at home.
Well, I'm going to start off and say, watch Westworld. If you have access to HBO, it is, I mean, it's produced by J.J. Abrams.
Can you binge it?
No, it's only 3 episodes in.
It's only coming out episode at a time? So HBO doesn't release everything, that's right.
Yeah. No, it's weekly.
I'm still not used to the world
where I can't like watch. It's not like the Netflix world.
What do you mean I can't watch every episode?
I can't watch it all.
This is ridiculous.
But I mean,
hogwash.
It's getting compared to Lost right now because of the J.J. Abrams connection. And it's setting up a lot of mysteries. But from what they've said, I mean, they have a plot line for the entire series. And takes place in the Old West. It's got robots. It's got cool technology. You got Anthony Hopkins, Ed Harris. So far, it's got me hooked.
James Marsden's in it too, isn't he?
Yep. I mean, it's got me hooked, and I'm looking forward to
Spike
to it every week.
No, Cyclops.
From the X-Men movies.
But if you have access to it, check it out. It's really good.
I want to check it out. I would love to see it as well.
Brad, what's yours?
I would probably say the thing I'm watching right now, I haven't caught up on all the Marvel stuff on Netflix. And we started watching Jessica Jones.
Ooh, and you really haven't caught up.
Yeah, we really haven't caught up.
There's a new Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Luke Cage that's out, that's new.
Yeah, and so far, I'm loving this Jessica Jones. I like the whole kind of the private eye detective and like who is this Jessica guy Jones, that's like right. in her head and like...
How far into it are you?
We're probably about 5 episodes in.
Okay, so you've met...
the police officer and the other... her friend and that whole thing happened where, you know, her and the police officer kind of friends.
Yeah. Oh, man, that show, I think that's probably one of the best. It's good. Did you watch Jessica Jones?
I haven't watched it.
Oh, my gosh, dude. It's so good.
I started watching it.
The villain in Jessica Jones is the most violating, creepy.
Oh, yeah. It's a very good psychological, just the way he can control people.
And it's the...
The doctor.
The reversal of the noir. It's the woman who is kind of drunk and angry and I like that too. Who is also Barty Crouch. I just actually watched Goblet of Fire.
Michael Tennant.
Yes.
David Tennant, that's what I meant.
It's a good one.
That's what I would recommend right now. That's currently what I'm watching. I am behind on the Netflix Marvel stuff, so
I have two, both Netflix originals, both available right now, one a movie, one a TV show. But first, I should recant, because last week I said Luke Cage, and I'm still not done, I have like 2 episodes left, and it kind of took about mid-season, which I probably cleared mid-season since last week, and it's not my favorite. It's okay, it's definitely not as good as Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones is way better than Luke Cage, but the first half of Luke Cage is great, and then it kind of wanes on me. But anyways, my two are a movie, Mascots.
Okay.
It's Christopher Geist movie. So if you liked Best in Show, Wind, Spinal Tap, all those. It's just another one of those. Another one.
It's a mockumentary. Okay.
About people who are mascots. And they go to this big mascot convention. Now, it is not as good as the movies I just mentioned. The whole time, Kristen and I wanted to laugh more than we did. But I just love the characters that he creates, and so it's just really fun. It's got some really good, almost everyone from the older movies is in it, or a lot of the actors that he always uses, and he's in it, obviously, and then a couple new people that are great, and then the other one is The Ranch. Season 2 just popped up on Netflix, and Season 2 is way better than Season 1, but it's Ashton Kutcher, Sam Elliott.
Oh, that show.
Now, it's weird.
I tried to watch
it. Yeah, it's weird. It took, the first episode, I was like, this is dumb, because it's got a laugh track, it's got the fakest sets you'll ever see, it's like old school 30-minute comedy with a really over-the-top laugh track, where you're like, man, you put this laugh track in.
Yeah, I tried that first episode.
Bright lights, like, nothing looks real, but Sam Elliott, and the relationship between, it's basically Hyde and Ashton Kutcher. Season two, they bring in Fez, which I was like, what? Man, this is weird that they're bringing all these people in. The story is really good. You do got to give it 4 or 5 episodes where you're like, all right, I see what's going on here. But anyways, I like the ranch. But if you don't like it, that makes sense to me too. I get how you could not. It is very, especially in our world, because TV has become so good, I feel like laugh tracks, you're like, I got to adjust my, reorient my world to get back into a laugh track.
But it's an interesting aesthetic. Like, do you ever watch Mr. Robot?
Yeah.
There, are you caught up with season 2?
I am not. I've only seen what's on Netflix or Amazon.
There's an episode in season 2 that is a throwback to 1980s, 90s television shows, and it has a laugh track in it, and it's a weird little episode.
Scrubs did it. Scrubs did one whole episode where they, instead of using, well-lit places, they do the bright lights.
Yeah.
Everything's so bright, and there's a laugh track, and situations are set up. Here it comes, and we deliver. Yeah. Like,
set up punchline.
So the difference with the ranch is there's no limitations. So the annoying thing about in the beginning, in the first season, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. They, like, you know, they drop the F-bomb. They say words. Like, oh, that's interesting with laugh tracks. Season 2, I feel like they are like, we can do this even more. And so it's like a little over the top. Like, I certainly don't mind cursing. And actually, there's a few lines where I'm like, that is the best placed curse word I've ever heard. I think they say the F word in like every episode where I'm like, okay, are you just doing this now just because you can? Because that seemed a little forced. And that's like the only cuss word they know. They don't know the other ones. They just know that one. Anyways,
I'm sure they go.
It's worth checking out. And it's not a huge time investment because there's just 30-minute episodes. And it's one that you don't have to watch. Like Luke Cage, I'll be like, oh, man, I just missed the whole scene. I need to watch what's happening because I'll try to listen to it. But the ranch you can actually just kind of listen to and you get what's going on.
So, thanks for checking out Cinema Guys. You can follow us on Twitter at The Cinema Guys. You can email us, thecinemaguys at 134inc, that's INK.com. Send us comments, questions. Let us know some trailers you want us to review, movies you want us to review. You can also help the Cinema Guys achieve a new audio setup.
Higher quality. High fidelity.
If you do...
highest fidelity.
GoFundMe.com/thecinemaguys. You can donate to our cause and help us out get a little better quality for you guys out there.
That way you can hear us all.
Yes.
You can hear us better.
Instead of like all the clicks and ticks and me moving and when I talk under my breath the whole time, it doesn't come up really well. Anyways.
But again, thanks for checking out The Cinema Guys, and we hope to see you at the movies.
Happy week.